Good evening, everyone. This is Terry Lynn Coop at the Blue Plate Special, and I am thrilled to death to serve up a brand new author tonight. Not exactly brand new. We'll talk about her journey here, but I have Allison M. Dixon on the line, and we're going to be talking about her new upcoming book from Putnam. How are you doing tonight, Allison?
Fantastic. Happy to be here. And yeah,
so
crazy journey.
So has anything interesting happened to you in the last couple of weeks?
Just your average everyday stuff and yeah, the agent getting the whole book deal thing for you, like lined up just out of the clear blue sky. Just, yeah, that whole thing.
No,
but other than that,
not just the whole agent thing. We're talking an auction. Why don't you give us a little?
Yeah.
Okay. We talked about it some on social media. Why don't you just talk about what a surreal journey this has been for you?
You know, it's funny because I had finished work on Mrs. Miller and the other Mrs. Miller. That's the book title. After we went through a lot of revisions, it took a long time to finally get the book to where it needed to be. And I finished it in September of 2017 and delivered it. And then, you know, anybody who's in this business for a while kind of knows the rule is hurry up and wait. So took some time for her to sort of reread the manuscript and make sure everything was in line. And then the holidays came, and of course, you know, it's always a bad time to try to do this sort of thing during the holidays. And so, so we decided, okay, we're going to get into early 2018, and then early 2018 came, and, you know, life continued to happen. And, I started to get just this feeling like this was all for nothing. I just kind of, you know, I kind of tried to put it out of my head. I started a new job. I, you know, started thinking of, you know, my life with, you know, like, okay, I had a good run. Because I'd been with Stephanie, my agent, for a few years, you know, and she mm-hmm. tried to sell my first book and it didn't go. It came very close, but didn't quite. And so, you know, I was just thinking this isn't going to happen. And, you know, then February came and then, you know, March came and I was like, wow, this is it. We're not going to do it. You know, and she had a lot of things happening with her. And I had a lot of things happening with me and we just kind of like weren't communicating as much. And then all of a sudden I get an email from her, not too long ago. It was like right around
the
middle of March. And the subject header was, okay, Dixon, saddle up. And I was like, what? Okay. And that's when I learned that, you know, the London Book Fair was coming up. And so she decided to sort of time the submission with the London Book Fair. And so she went ahead mm-hmm. and just submitted this thing worldwide. Normally, you know, they start domestic and kind of go from there, but she kind of took the tack of let's get this thing to all the publishers because we have scouts over there right now that are going to the fair. There are a lot of publishers who are antsy and looking for something new. And so that way, if something happened internationally, it could stir the pot with the U.S. Editors. And so technically, I can say this now because we finally, you know, a lot of these deals have been closed, but my first sale was actually with Mondadori in Italy. They were the very first ones to buy this book in a preempt and for a pretty surprising amount. Like we were not, you know, like we were both going like, whoa, that's for Italy. That's kind of interesting, you know? And then other things started kind of murmuring over there. And then we're like, what's going on with the U.S.? What's going on with the U.S.? And then it just kind of got crazy about a week later. Like I was sitting on the Italy deal for about 5 days, you know, going crazy. Because
yes.
I was like, I can't say anything. I'm posting Tom Cruise jumping on the couch gifts and stuff all over the internet. Like I can't say anything, but I'm sitting here in my head. I already have technically a book deal, but it's Italian. So, you know, I'm just like, what the hell am I supposed to do? So, so then Stephanie called, she keeps emailing me. I was getting an email a day at this point. And, you know, a lot of editors were interested. There were about 20 on the entire submission list, and it ended up whittling down to about 10 or so. And then I talked to like five. One of them was from the UK. And then, yeah, I just kind of, it went from there, you know, battle between Putnam ended up being the winner, but there, I don't know if I can talk about the other ones, but there were three other really good, really great. They were all great. I mean, that was kind of the problem. It was like the highest class problem you could have. It's like, you know, choosing one of these four amazing, you know, and I'm just like, and then Stephanie was like, you know, after I talked to these editors and stuff over the course of 1 week, then she comes back to me with an email and is like, well, I'm going to set the date and the terms for the auction, or, you know, on a set a closing date on Thursday, April 8th or whatever it was. No, 5th. I'm sorry. And I'm like, wait, close date for US rights. You know, that's what she said. And I'm like, so does that mean what I think it means? She's like, yeah, I'm going to let them bid and we're going to, you know, go from there. And I'm like, we have an auction. Oh my God. So yeah, it was just crazy. Like it took about, well, that between that email and the end of that was about another week that went by, and I'm sitting here like on pins and needles waiting for Thursday, April 5th to roll around. And then it finally does. And first thing in the morning I wake up and I'm like, this is all bullshit. This is not going to happen. It's going to be, you know, I'm not going to hear from her at all today, you know, cause that's sometimes what happens when sometimes they say, I'll be in touch with you tomorrow. It's usually like, I'll be in touch with you next week. I mean, that's a lot of times what happens in this business. So, I get an email from her at 9:30 in the morning. Putnam came in with, or no, it was the other, it was the first, one, the other one, they came in with their bid, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's generous. And this was a smaller publisher. They're more of an indie, but they're like a big indie. And they come back with something that I was totally expecting. I was like, oh yeah, that'll be, you know, that's about what I expected for a debut thriller. I'm like, that's cool. You know, like, I don't imagine it's going to get that much better. Yeah. I'm like, you know, that is right in line with what I thought it would be. I'm like, okay, cool. We're starting off good. And I'm thinking, you know, what's going to happen from there? Then the next bid comes in and it's like twice that. And I about fell off my chair. I was like, okay. And so then another couple hours goes by. Cause when they say auction, they make it sound like it's, you know, like an auction where it's like, you know, numbers flying everywhere in this active moment. But of course it all happens in email time. And of course people in the publishing houses are getting, you know, numbers and okays from their boss before they come and present their offer. And then all the stuff between my agent and them is happening behind the scenes. And, you know, and so I just get the email with the final offer, and then Putnam comes in with their offer. And here's the funny thing. It wasn't, you know, it was good. It was really good. But of course, here's where I start feeling like Paris Hilton or something like that. It's like, well, you know, this much, but it's about this much. It doesn't give you that. You know, it's just at this point you start feeling like, wow, I'm really like splitting hairs between, you know, the types of caviar, you know, like, you know what I mean? It just felt, I felt like, I'm telling my agent, I'm like, this isn't happening to me right now. It just really isn't. But anyway, it ended up holding me in even longer suspense because Putnam had to kind of, like, their boss went home at the end of the day and they had to go back and sort of come up with a counteroffer, but it took another day. And so I had to wait overnight, and then the next day Putnam came in, and, you know, and so it was like, you know, they just ended up coming in with the best deal. And without getting too many details, I will say that I ended up with the best of both worlds because I ended up with the UK editor that I absolutely adore. They came in with like a joint thing, but we ended up kind of being able to split
split that up, and I was able to get the Sphere editor that I wanted with the US editor that I wanted. And it was just like, again, it was like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. But again, they were all fantastic. So
trust me, we're all teasing you, but absolutely congratulations. We're thrilled. And now I understand there it's like, give me the 411 on the book, what it's about.
Oh, the book. Okay. So it is a domestic thriller. That is sort of the genre, the subgenre that they're picking. And it is about starts off with basically a lonely housewife in Chicago. She's her name's Phoebe, and she is she's basically living this sort of, her life is kind of running into a sort of dead end scenario. She has a nice husband, and you know, but they don't have any kids, but they live in this sort of wealthy environment. She, her parents had money and all this, and but her own life is just kind of flatlined. She's been living off mommy and daddy's money for most of her life and never really quite did anything with herself. Then her marriage is kind of like, again, it's running out of gas, you know. But she starts noticing that there's a car that's been sitting outside her house every morning for the last few weeks. And, you know, so somebody's, you know, she starts to become convinced this person is watching her, and she's watching it. And it's just, you know, it's this little blip in her day. And at the same time, this new family moves in, you know, across the street. And so, you know, little things are starting to happen that sort of pick up in her life. And then she ends up basically very entangled in the life of this family. She becomes infatuated with their son, who is, at the time, he's just about 18. You know, had to make it mostly legal. not too creepy, but maybe like a Mrs. Robinson kind of situation. But she also becomes close friends with the kid's mom. And so she starts sort of leading like almost like a triple life. She, you know, she's still married to her husband. She's having this sort of affair with the neighbor boy, and then being besties with his mom and keeping this all secret, all these separate compartments.
Nothing creepy about that.
Not at all. Meanwhile, this person who is watching her very closely for reasons, that I don't think I can quite reveal. I think that would spoil it a little bit, but I will say it does become sort of like a train crash, a collision scenario, between Phoebe and this other person, and also this scenario that she's sort of created herself between the mother, you know, this family that she's entangled with. So, and it just gets more and more outlandish and insane from there. And there's a good bit of sort of dark humor mixed in there as well. And intrigue, cat and mouse, you know, I think it just kind of grips you and kind of like pulls you along, and you just are like, what is even happening? Which is kind of like my life right now. Maybe not, you know, to that extent, but
it sounds like it almost has a Hitchcock touch to it.
Yeah, actually that word has been tossed around a little bit with this, because honestly, that is kind of what I was going for when I was writing it. I am a huge Hitchcock fan, and particularly Rear Window and Vertigo, two of my very favorite films of all time. And I actually kind of called back to Vertigo quite a bit with a couple of the plot elements, but there's also a voyeurism aspect with Rear Window that I really love to capture there, just sort of watching people from afar.
That was my initial thought when you were explaining it to me, was Rear Window. That was the first thing that came to mind.
Yes.
I know that just crushes you to be compared.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, I love that kind of, classic suspense, you know, where, you know, people that don't know they're being watched or being watched, and, you know, you sort of have that outside person sort of observing things, and then they kind of become pulled into it. I still remember how I felt the first time I saw Rear Window, actually. And, I think I was a knot the entire time. Like, my whole body was just tensed up and around my ears. And so I love that kind of suspense. And being able to mix in things like murder and, you know, all that. We all know we love murder, or I love murder. You know,
absolutely.
I love murder. So
absolutely, I love murder.
Makes the world go round, so. Right?
Well, now we've talked about that a little bit. Why don't we let the listeners kind of decide for themselves? You have an excerpt for me, don't you?
I do. And I was going over, like, what should I write or what should I read? Because I think what I will do is start, I'll give you a little like preamble, and then I'll start from just a little way through the first chapter. So basically the book starts off with her noticing that the car is there. That's where it begins. She's looking out the window. It's like her daily ritual. She looks out the window, sees the blue Ford Focus sitting out there outside her house, and she makes note of it. She keeps a little booklet and everything, and she admits that she could have approached the car by now or called the cops by now, but part of her is like, well, on the one hand, what if they're just, you know, it's because the car's marked as a courier service, and she's like, what if it is a courier just sitting there on her break, or what if this is some kind of sting for one of her other neighbors and she would interrupt it? And then another part of her is like, well, this is fun. So this is an interesting, most interesting part of my day, which is kind of pathetic because disenchanted or with her own life, you know? So anyway, after she makes note of her thing, this is where this excerpt starts. She makes note of today's appearance and returns to the kitchen to refill her coffee and focus on other things, like what Wyatt wants for dinner tonight and whether he's going to watch the remaining episodes of House of Cards with her or if she should go ahead and knock them out herself. Ah, the glamorous life. He's currently slurping down a bowl of cereal, and the sound immediately grates on her nerves. Has he always done that, or is she just now starting to notice it? She's discovered other micro-habits of his that make her fantasize about bludgeoning him with an iron skillet like an old-timey cartoon wife, such as pretending like he's about to laugh when he says something passive-aggressive, or leaving his hair in the bathroom sink after he cleans out his electric razor. But she's sure it's the disgusting racket of slurping, crunching, and tearing into his every meal that will send her over the edge. She recently read about a study linking a sensitivity to eating sounds to higher IQ. Phoebe is sure she qualifies for a Mensa membership by now. She soothes herself with a simple thought. In just a few minutes, he'll be off to work. Blessed silence will soon wrap around her like a fuzzy blanket, at which point she'll lock all the doors, arm the security system, and return to bed, spreading her arms and legs wide across both sides like a starfish. Sometime around noon, she'll get up, put on her bathing suit, bring a book and bottle of wine poolside. 2 hours before Wyatt comes home from work, she'll put on actual clothes and brush her hair, try to ignore the lengthening of her brown roots as they chase away her blonde highlights inch by inch. She'll dab on a little makeup, hoping to hide the deepening lines around her eyes and brighten her increasingly sallow complexion. She'll put on clothes that have a bit of extra room and stretch in them to accommodate her ever-widening ass. There was a time she would have passed as a certified Barbie clone, but the maintenance was a killer. Hours in the salon, followed by hours at home plucking and waxing, covering herself in serums and creams, all designed to suck away the years, all while working out 2 or 3 hours a day and nibbling on rabbit food to keep her figure movie star slim. And for what? Snapping selfies like a Kardashian? No thanks. The moment she'd discovered the grace of drinking wine and reading or wearing yoga pants with no intention of doing actual poses, she'd found nirvana. It isn't like Wyatt cares. He barely sees her anymore. To him, she's a uterus with legs, a very stubborn and uncooperative uterus. After he finishes his breakfast, he rinses his bowl and places it in the dishwasher, but he doesn't pick up his keys. Instead, he comes back to the table where she's slowly making her way through a bowl of Raisin Bran. my first appointment isn't until 10. When I sit out back for a bit, she hesitates. This is aberrant. Even when he has extra time in the morning, he usually spends it at the office, catching up on paperwork. He clearly wants to discuss something, which is usually a guarantee they'll end up in a fight of some sort. They'll rarely come to an accord on anything these days, but the faster they get through whatever is on his mind, the sooner she can have her blessed solitude. So she says, sure, and leads him outside and sits on one of the long couches. Their covered porch has nicer furniture than most people's houses, complete with a full kitchen, bar, and integrated stereo system. Propane heaters placed around the perimeter ensure they can use the space late into autumn if they want, but usually she covers everything back here in October in eager preparation for her favorite time of year, winter, when the snow and cold become a natural barricade and she doesn't have to make as many excuses for staying indoors. Okay, so that's the part I have blocked out. I could keep going. But basically, they're about to have a very difficult discussion. So,
and now, what is the working title of this?
Mrs. Miller and the Other Mrs. Miller. So that can kind of give a hint, maybe, as to what might happen if we talk about someone watching her and there's some... It just becomes a very twisty, turny thing, but that just gives a glimpse, I think, into Phoebe's sort of her married life and her domestic life or not. Great.
Now, if the stars and planets align, when are we going to see this out?
Probably next. Well, they're saying summer 2019, so maybe between June and August, hopefully. But hopefully we'll also have a more firm date here in the coming months. So,
now,
it's moving along. So
we talked earlier about your success here that we're all teasing you about because we're secretly thrilled for you has not been overnight. When did you actually start writing?
Oh my gosh. Seriously started writing in 2008. I'd been tinkering with it for a while, and you know, I wanted to be a writer my whole life, and of course went to college and had the desire killed out of me for a long time, and just from academic writing and everything, and finally around 2008 I decided it was time to give it a go, and I penned a short story and kind of went from there. I wrote a lot of short stories actually during that time period. So,
and then tell me about Colt Coltrane.
Yeah, Colt Coltrane actually was a merging of my loves of science fiction and that sort of 1940s detective noir genre. Love that. Those old noir movies. And so I really wanted to write something from that era, but not have it be so strictly period fiction that, and so I decided to just put robots in it. And so I created sort of an alternative universe. And I guess it kind of falls into the diesel punk category. If people like to sort of split those hairs. And I had a lot of fun with that. I wrote two books and a short story, and I have another one in me. I have ideas, but I independently produce those, and so the time isn't always there. And you know, of course, I got off into writing other things, and so it's a fun series. If you like pulpy kind of throwback stuff, and it's definitely like a different twist on the kind of stuff I do. So.
And how strings?
Oh, strings. And that's like a completely different thing. That's the funny thing about strings. And like my whole catalog up until now, it's sort of a mixed bag. But strings was really like a total departure from me. And I think what put me on the track to writing things like Mrs. Miller, because it takes place in the modern day and it doesn't involve supernatural elements, doesn't involve, anything like science fiction or anything like that. It's just straight up sort of no robots. But there is kind of like a mutant-y type character that I never really come out and say is a mutant, but he's definitely not quite right at all. And he likes to climb around on webs in his big you know, isolated mansion and do, and he, yeah, it's still very horrific. It's very much like something you'd see in a Rob Zombie movie, you know, meets like slamming right into something like Thomas Harris or, you know, or Stephen King. It's sort of like a, you know, you have like this really horrific element, and then you have sort of like this modern day mafia-ish human trafficking crime story that kind of collides with it. And I had an absolute epiphany writing that, and the fact that I'm like, I want to keep writing real people, because the real monsters to me are the scariest. These are people that you can run into on the street. And so to me, it was like, that's where I found my calling finally when I wrote that book. Up until then, I wrote like The Last Supper was another one. It's out of print, but that was a dystopian sci-fi. And I love science fiction, but I think I like consuming it more than I like creating it. And so I finally found like my home, I think, as a writer when I wrote Strings. And everything that I wrote after that, pretty much, except for the cult stories, which are like novellas, they're very short little playground stories, you know. Mm-hmm. But my bread and butter at that point sort of became the realistic, gritty stuff. So
now, these are all still, except for Last Supper, these are all still in print, right? They can be found
absolutely
at Amazon and other fine purveyors of both virtual and real, virtual and free books.
Yes, The Last Supper is available. Coltrane is available also on Amazon, also Audible. There are Audible editions. I also have a co-authored steampunk called The Oilman's Daughter that I wrote with my good friend Ian Healy, and that's a classic steampunk adventure story with some sort of Western-y elements to it that I think, again, a departure, but it's a good mix of he and I both together. So. But that's what I have right now. I'm just a little mishmash of short stories. You might find out there some creepy kind of Twilight Zone stuff.
One thing that you've mentioned is, it's funny, as soon as you sell your first book, everybody starts going, what have you done for me today? And they want to hear about the second book.
Yeah. So, you know, part of a lot of the contracts of, you know, especially if you're dealing with sort of the big five type publishers is and maybe some of the smaller ones too, is they, if they don't sign you for a two book deal, they at least want to have the opportunity to review and accept or refuse your next work. And so right now I'm working on revising a book, the first book actually that my agent tried to sell back in 2015, which is called Secret Things. And it's a has a very Southern Gothic bent, but it's a crime mystery thriller, but with a huge family secret angle to it. And there were a lot of taboo things in it that really the editors loved it, but it was just one of those books. It was almost like I was tapping a bit too much into V.C. Andrews, Flowers in the Attic kind of stuff with it. You know, it was just one of those books. It's really hard to find a commercial audience for. And so now I'm taking all the lessons I learned with Mrs. Miller and my many, many, many revisions on it, and sort of applying certain sensibilities. I'm punching it up with the pacing. I'm, you know, making things happen a little faster and making my characters kind of whine less and do more. Which is sort of, I think it was like the other thing. I'm like, maybe they should have less existential moaning and more actually doing stuff. You know,
thank you. Please. Thank you. Thank you.
Exactly. It's like, you know, we get it. Your family is full of assholes. Now, why don't you do something about it? You know, so that's sort of what I keep telling this main character. I'm like, just do something. And so I'm making her more proactive. And that was actually the secret with making Mrs. Miller finally work, was actually making the characters very much more active in their role, you know, and less all stuff's happening to me. It's no, like more I am happening to it. You know, I'm the force here. So,
we're getting close on time here. So if people want to find you, you're on Facebook, Twitter, right?
Yes, I am. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Allie D, MSALLIED. And then Facebook, you can just look me up, Allison M. Dixon. I don't keep a very active page, but fan page, but AllisonMDixon.com is my website. So feel free to check me out there.
And are we going to be seeing you at any conferences this year, or will that be next year?
Probably next year. I have a couple little local, tiny little local things in Dayton, Ohio for the end of the year. Next year is kind of like to be determined until I find out what's going on with the book release and, you know, what I might be having to do for travel and everything. So this year is just kind of like preparing for it's the calm before the storm, I think.
Now, although I want to tell you, you know, BoucherCon is in September. In Florida.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Are you going to that?
We will all be there.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I might have to make an exception and get my butt down there then.
Absolutely. We can even find a place to stuff you into for the night if need be. I'd love to see you down there, honestly. It's
great, that'd be fantastic. Conference. All right. Well, we'll keep our ears to the ground and see what we can make happen. So,
this is the first of many interviews you're going to be getting, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you for getting in on the ground floor with this, Terry. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
This is a pleasure. I'm such a fan of yours I'm just so thrilled to get to talk to you, and you know, you're just an awesome person.
Absolutely.
So.
Think about, and actually, I'm actually quite serious. Think about BCon. It's like for mystery and suspense fans, and that's what it's about. It's about the fans. And that's the most fun part of it. Like when you go to the panels, it'll be more like about, you know, creating great villains, not a path to publication, you know, that type of
Absolutely.
Thing. It's all about the readers. And did I mention it's Florida?
Okay. Yeah. You're getting me. You're getting me.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm feeling it.
And I will keep working on you. But for tonight, I will say good evening to you and thanks. And I look forward to talking to you again when the book gets closer.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Terry.
All right. Take care and good night.
All right.
And
good night.
Else, that's our show tonight. And just a reminder, this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up to date with the hottest authors fresh off the grill. Tune in next Friday night when I'm talking to Ms. Bryn Chandler, who made her bones in the animation game as a woman writer back in the early days when women didn't do that sort of thing. One thing we're going to be talking about is things like game day, being a woman in the industry, and unfortunately, the more things change, the more they stay the same. With that, I will say goodnight. Thank you.